May 19, 1780 dawned like a promise. It had been a particularly brutal winter in New England, but spring had finally arrived. There were fields to plant, goods to manufacture, ships to load and unload. And then, as Cornell University professor Tom Campanella explains, things got weird.
Shortly after 9 o'clock, and I quote here, came on an appearance over the whole visible heavens, a light grassy hue, nearly the color of pale cider.
Within about an hour, darkness had fallen. And I'm talking darkness. Birds stopped chirping, hens returned to their roosts, crickets came out. Various diary entries from the time paint quite the picture.
The inky black was probably as gross as ever has been observed since the almighty fiat gave birth to light.
Now, in 1780, New England was still a deeply religious society, steeped in a literal reading of the Bible, chock full of passages where great darkness portends some pretty frightening things.
People are panicking, and people are indeed flocking to the churches, to the meeting houses, and great fear, really, among a lot of people that this was a sign of the end times.
It's probably best that folks had no idea at the time that the darkness stretched all the way from southern Maine to northern New Jersey. In Connecticut, an increasingly panicked legislature turned to Abraham Davenport, who proved himself to be a true Yankee.
The day of judgment is either approaching or it is not. If it is not, there is no cause for adjournment. If it is, I choose to be found doing my duty. I wish, therefore, that candles may be brought.
The darkness lasted all day. But of course, the end did not come. The sun came up the next morning, and a curious debate began. Not everyone had looked to the heavens when darkness fell. Massachusetts was also the center of a burgeoning scientific community.
These amateur Franklin-like characters who start taking detailed notes and making these field observations.
There weren't any scientific journals yet, so a protracted debate about what had happened played out for weeks in the newspapers of the day.
There's one fellow who is convinced this sudden darkness was caused by the passing of a comet. Another one, an errant transit of a planet.
Still others noted a curious buildup of soot and a sulfur smell in the rains that came in the days that followed. And they, it turns out, were onto something.
We find pine stumps. They don't decay very fast. We cut them, and then we do this thing called cross-dating with dendrochronology so that we can date every fire scar that's on some old stump.
Richard Guyette is a forestry professor at the University of Missouri. He says dendrochronology is incredibly precise. Using it, he and his team found that in the spring of 1780, an enormous fire raged through what is today Algonquin Provincial Park, north of Ontario.
1780 was larger than any other event, and we do know that those forests can burn quite rapidly.
In 2007, his team published a study. Between the fire and what is now known about how smoke interacts with the atmosphere and the wind patterns at the time, they concluded that the fire in Algonquin was the likely cause of New England's dark day.
I would go like with the 75% chance. It's not impossible. It could have been from New Hampshire or several other places, although we have the data for Algonquin.
New England's dark day. Proof that, if nothing else, the debate between religion and science in America is as old as the country itself. And it happened right here, 235 years ago this week. From the Curiosity Desk, I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, WGBH, Boston's local NPR.
Never to come back. I've seen people turn their heads and quickly look away. Like a newborn baby, it just happens every day. I look inside myself and see my heart is black. I see my red door, I must have it into black.
Maybe then I'll fade away. Face the facts. It's not easy facing up when you're
go turn a deeper blue. I could not foresee this thing happening to you. If I look hard enough into the setting sun, I see the girls walk by dressed in their summer clothes.